This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly old permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today at RocketMortgageSquares.com. Coming up in 20 minutes, we are stunned to a news at the top of the hour. Yogi Roth will join us to discuss what happened, or coming up an hour from 20 minutes from now, rather. Yogi Roth is going to join us to talk about the victory last night by the Alabama Crimson Tide. In 40 minutes, we'll talk about Pete Carroll and his stubbornness this year that led to one of the worst losses of his NFL coaching career, and perhaps coaching both in college as well. Now, talking about last night's national championship game, this may very well be Nick Saban's greatest team ever. And that is saying something, considering how great Bama has been for as long as he has been there. It is now six national championships for him at the Crimson Tide, with the Crimson Tide, and now another one with LSU as well. So that's seven national championships for Nick Saban. He has now surpassed Bear Bryant, and you can safely call him the greatest coach ever. And there are some extenuating circumstances. I mean, kind of like back in Bear Bryant's day, the rich continue to stay rich in college football. And that's a topic I want to delve into as well. But during Bear Bryant's tenure, there was unlimited scholarships, unlimited rosters. And so you could just, if you were Bear, collect all of the great talent, all of the five-star kids, and just stash them and not even play them so that your rivals didn't get them. You can't do that anymore. There's the 85 scholarship limit meant to disperse much of the talent. And every team is on TV. And so back in the 60s and 70s, if you wanted to play on TV, going to Alabama was very important. Going to Notre Dame was very important. Going to Texas or Nebraska was very important. Now you can go to, you know, Appalachian State and be on ESPN Plus, or go to, you know, any program and you'll be on TV. Go to Wake Forest and every game's going to be on TV or digitally streamed. So that was supposed to break apart some of the stranglehold on talent as well. But for Saban, I think if you want to make a case for him being better than Bear Bryant, that because of attention on the job, because of resources spent by so many more programs, and because of the money that flows through the sport to so many conferences, being one of the three best and remaining there and being this dominant is harder than it was 40 years ago. I think that would be the case. There is such a scrutiny and such a pressure that when, you know, Alabama doesn't make a Final Four, when they don't make a college football playoff, there's going to be some people that say, has Nick Saban lost it? When they don't win a national championship, the fans in Alabama say this is unacceptable. Saban's a little bit above the fray on everything, but you know, the pressure and the scrutiny is much different today than ever before, and the resources that other programs have is better than ever before. But just the stats behind Alabama's dominance is incredible. This year, they played 11 SEC games and then Notre Dame in the playoff and then Ohio State last night. Their average margin of victory was 29 points. They won their national championship against the second best team of the country. No doubt Ohio State was the second best team of the country after they beat Clemson. They won their national championship by 4 touchdowns. Their offense alone had 5 All-Americans, which included the Heisman Trophy winner, Devontae Smith, and 2 more players, their quarterback, Mac Jones, their running back, Najee Harris, who were also in the top 5 in the Heisman. So they had 3 of the top 5 in the Heisman Trophy voting. I mean, last night, they put up 52 points. They averaged putting up 48 points this season per game and 541 yards. They averaged 48 points per game. Devontae Smith won the Heisman. He had 12 catches for 215 yards and 3 touchdowns in the first half last night. Mac Jones threw for 464 yards and 5 scores last night. Najee Harris combined catching the ball and running the football for 160 yards and 3 touchdowns last night. Alabama played 52 quarters of football this year. They were shut out in 2 of them. They scored at least a point in 50 of their 52 quarters this year. I mean, they are one of the greatest teams ever, certainly, and one of the greatest Saban teams ever. As for the rich getting richer, this is inherently the issue with college football. I have no resentment towards Alabama. The greatness is obvious. Nick Saban's greatness is obvious. The kids, I mean, the players that they have deserve everything that they get. I mean, they are great players that are constantly in competition with the best players in America to get even playing time, and then let alone touches at a game, and let alone make what they do out of them. So, I mean, tons of respect for the Alabama kids and the players that come out of that program, because they're traditionally really kind of disciplined and accountable and hardworking and talented and all the things that you want to see when you draft them into the NFL. But Kirk Herbstreit had something damning to say the other day about college football. He said, our postseason is the worst postseason. We have the worst postseason out of any sport. And his point was, it's the same teams every year. I mean, last night, Alabama, Ohio State could have been Alabama, Ohio State, or Alabama, Clemson out of any year. We're not seeing any party crashers, any parity, any new faces, any new names, any new programs. And that is a real issue, because next year, who is going to be the preseason favorites? Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. And when you have Kirk Herbstreit, who of course bangs the drum for his sport and is the most notable, most influential voice of the sport, saying our postseason stinks, there needs to be something done. Because as great as watching Alabama pick apart everybody is, there's only so much that the casual fan cares about unless you have something fresh there. And now Clemson's gotten stale as well. I mean, they're there every year. They were fresh a couple of years ago, watching Deshaun Watson do battle against Alabama. Wow, this is amazing. 5 years later, watching Clemson against Alabama is just another playoff game. So there's a couple of ways you can do this. Clearly putting every team on TV, every school on TV, getting their exposure social media-wise, that doesn't matter. You know, because still it has not raised the rest of the SEC up to Bama's level. It has not raised the rest of the Big Ten up to Ohio State's level. It has not raised the rest of the ACC up to Clemson's level. Scholarship reductions would do that. If you said, okay, instead of 85 scholarships, you get 70. Those 15 kids have to go somewhere else. Or 65 scholarships, those 20 kids have to go somewhere else. But do you really want to limit your scholarships? You really want to take away opportunities from kids? Probably not. The only way to really do this is to expand the playoff. And what I would do is I would expand it at first to six. And I would say, okay, we've got the final four. Let's get two more in here, and the top two seeds get a bye. And that means, at the very least, two, hopefully, non-traditional powers will at least have games that are playoff games, which, let's face it, are just more important to the American public than the biggest bowl game. Play your New Year's Six all you want, but UCF and Boise State and the other group of five teams, the Cincinnati's that play those games, it's fine to see Cincinnati at a Sugar Bowl or a UCF team in a bowl game, a Fiesta Bowl, but it doesn't resonate like, well, if you win this game, you could play in the national championship game. So you've got to expand it, and frankly, I would say that you have to put a group of five team in there. That if you have an expanded six-team playoff, that you have to put a group of five team in there. Like this year, Cincinnati has to be in there. I mean, maybe you just say, okay, if a group of five team finishes in the top 10, but you also don't want to expand the playoff and just make, okay, we're going to have the final four, Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame, USC, and Penn State. That doesn't necessarily do much for you either. So I think you have to have an inherent way for a Cinderella to break in. I think you have to. Now, the transfer portal is interesting because now you've got kind of a free agency of college football and you're lessening the restrictions on transferring, and so that could disperse the talent. But the fact of the matter is that last night, it just feels like it is of the same old, same old. As great as Alabama is, it feels like it's part of an era that needs to break apart. Where it's not like you can count on Alabama every single year being in there. And I know what people will say, well, there were years where it felt like Miami was going to be there every year, or Florida State, or Nebraska, or Penn State, or Notre Dame. And where are those programs? That is true in USC. But the cycle's turning very slowly right now. And the world is moving very fast. So college football is not keeping up with that pace. I really love the tradition of college football. I really love it. It is why I love college football. I just love the pageantry and the tradition and the mascots and the rivalries and the histories of the schools. And I love that every stadium I've ever gone to, and I make it a point to go to a college football game in a different place every single year that I've ever been. I love that it feels totally unlike any other place that I would go in college football. You know, in the NFL, I've probably gone to half the stadiums of the NFL. They all feel the same. It is not the same in college football. Everything feels different. That uniqueness is not being reflected in how they decide a championship. That uniqueness, that flavor that it makes college football so awesome, the individuality of it is not reflected in how we crown the champion. It's the same thing every year. And so it's totally, it's weird. It's like college football is a regular season that is its own crazy, chaotic mess. And then it's this very traditional, very standard, very predictable, unmessy Final Four. And those two things need to be wedded more. They need to be closer connected. I just last hour went over my top six storylines of the NFL wildcard weekend. And Mraz, you wanted to add one of the biggest storylines coming out of Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I think you did a good job with it. If I could take one out, I would probably take the Russell Wilson one out. I think that's a pretty good take. But to me, the Rams now being 6-3 in their last nine versus the Seahawks kind of doesn't make that a bad loss for Russell Wilson. It kind of feels sort of expected. My one I would insert in, the future of Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, yesterday we had Kevin Harlan on the show talking about him and Pouncey crying on the sideline. Roethlisberger, the whole storyline after they were 11-0 and kind of fell apart there at the end. He has to have the week off in week 17. He comes out, and I think because of the late surge of the second half, we forget, Roethlisberger was awful in the first half, a turnover machine. And really, here we are talking about Brady continuing to play on. We know Breeze is probably out. Okay, Rivers, we're kind of indifferent. Do we really care about his future? Ben Roethlisberger is a Hall of Fame two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback that possibly due to salary cap problems and because of the way he looked, has just played his last game with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I feel like that is not being talked about enough. And that, to me, has to be a top two storyline coming out of Wild Card Weekend.
If it was Ben Roethlisberger's final game, I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be. I don't think Ben Roethlisberger walks away from that much money. I don't think the Steelers walk away from him. You know, while they collapsed at the end of the season and had a terrible playoff game, they went 12-4. They began the season 11-0, and the offense through the air was clicking for the first 2 months of the season and beyond. They don't have a young guy on the roster, and they don't have a high draft pick. Do you really think the Steelers move on from Big Ben this offseason?
I have a hard time picturing it as well, but the way Harlan really laid it out, like, they don't have assets, they don't have cap room, and frankly, if you're a smart organization, and I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are, and I think they do want to be loyal to Big Ben.
They're extraordinarily smart.
But, D.A., I mean, you can't go into next year and think that Ben Roethlisberger's output down the stretch and what you saw were basically all he became was dink and dunk because he just can't throw anymore is going to now get better and not get worse next year. And sometimes really smart organizations, I know this is a little different with the quarterback position, like the New England Patriots, you get out 1 year early before 1 year too late. And I just think the Steelers are setting themselves up for disaster if they bring back Big Ben next year. And even if that means they don't have a great answer, but maybe it means you kind of take a dive for a year and you find yourself at the top of the draft next year and you go and replace it and just figure out some parts with the Steelers this year and just take a step back.
Well, the Steelers, though, they're not the type of organization that takes dives. I mean, even last year with Big Ben out, they went 8-8. I mean, they were in the playoff race until week 17.
Right.
When's the last time they were 4-12? When's the last time they were that bad?
I know.
Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. He's been there for 16 years. So if they did do that, it would be a complete anomaly. It would be something that they never, ever do. And the Steelers also were 11-0 this year. I mean, if you went back to the week before Thanksgiving, we were all saying Steelers at Arrowhead or the Chiefs at Heinz Field is the AFC Championship game. Now, of course, a month and a half later, that looked completely different.
Right.
But are they that far from being a team that can compete for a Super Bowl? I mean, they lose Bud Dupree. They lose Hayden.
Devin Bush.
They lose Devin Bush. Those are three starters/stars on defense. If those three guys stay healthy, I mean, don't you think that the Steelers are probably still playing?
They're definitely a defensive-oriented team first, and that was a big reason why they were 11-0. And I guess your question then would be, Big Ben making the money he's making, if the team is defense first, can you have it?
But if those three guys stay healthy, they're the 2 seed instead of
probably. They
were the 3 seed. And as the 2 seed, they would get the Colts at Heinz Field. They probably win that game.
And probably right. And obviously you could correlate the fact that they went 1-4 down the stretch with when finally Bud Dupree went down, because they were treading water after that once they lost Devin Bush. But once Bud Dupree went down, their pass rush took a hit, they completely fell apart, yada, yada, yada. So I get all of that, and I get the Steelers could sell that and say, we're going to get our defense back, let's go for it. But blaming those injuries and doing all that doesn't take away from the fact that Big Ben looked absolutely cooked. And I know the stats from that Brown game will read that he had this unbelievable, you know, aerial attack throwing 400 yards, this, that, and the other. They gave him a week off to rest, and he couldn't have looked worse in that first half. And
looked
threw
terrible.
Threw them out of the game. And really, when the defense did suffer injuries, you can't bank that you're going to be completely healthy on the defensive side of the ball next year. They can't survive behind Big Ben anymore carrying the load. So you really just need to cross your fingers and hope your defense stays healthy and he doesn't turn it over enough to make a run. I don't know. I think that's a lot to ask from the Steelers next year. In a division, by the way, where the Browns are only going to get better, Joe Burrow and the Bengals are only going to be better, and the freaking Baltimore Ravens are awesome.
Well, I think if the Steelers bring back Big Ben for one last ride, and Ben wants to play, but this is also up to him, you have to be able to run the football. And that means spending this first-round draft pick on a running back or signing a running back in free agency and helping the offensive line out, because James Conner can't do it. Conner was also injured this season. You can't have Ben Roethlisberger throw for 4,500 yards next year. You have to be able to limit his usage, and that's another crucial part of this. Yeah. They put the bulk of the offensive responsibility on a 38-year-old reconstructed elbow. And that was stupid.
DA, what you just laid out, what the Steelers have to do to help Big Ben, is the blueprint for the 2018 Giants, and they're still paying the penalty of that. Taking Saquon Barkley and hoping he can gather for Eli's last run, and banking on the fact that you had these great defensive players that they had signed in 2016. That
but, I mean, the Steelers are going to pick at 26 or 27. The Giants picked at number two. I would never say the Steelers should take a running back at two.
I know that, but this first-round asset, 27 or two, I know there's a big difference, is still enormous, and I think investing your first-round pick because you want to try to make one last run with Big Ben who looked cooked on a running back, you're asking for trouble that you're going to pay for the next 2-3 years down the line.
I don't feel that way about running backs taken in the 20s. I think that once you get out of the top 20, I think I'd be fine taking a running back. Do you think it's really that bad of an investment to take a running back? Like Clyde Edwards-Helaire at 32. That wasn't a terrible investment by the Chiefs.
Well, all I know is this, DA. There were 14 NFL teams this year, and only three of them had running backs that were taken in the first round, and only one of them was a team that took a running back in the first round.
And that'd be the Chiefs, right?
The Chiefs with Edwards-Helaire, right. The others were Leonard Fournette with the Bucs, and the other one now is slipping my mind with somebody else that's been retread. Oh, Engram, who wasn't even active for the Ravens.
Mark Ingram.
Mark Ingram, yep.
When we come back here on the show, yesterday we nearly had a death on the air. We'll revisit how this happened, plus you're stunned to a news.
What a tease.
DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Be a good day with DA.
Now all I'm thinking about is Chex Mix because I'm so damn fat.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
That was the day that Mraz was trying to say chess game or chessboard and said Chex Mix. A little different. Slightly. This week in the NFL playoffs continue on CBS. The AFC is down to four teams remaining, with the defending champion Chiefs still the team to beat. Who takes the next step to the road to the Super Bowl? Find out this weekend when the AFC Divisional Round plays out, only on CBS.
CBS Sports Spectacular, yeah!
Oh, and goody. Our copy department still didn't get the updated game schedule. So let's actually give you the CBS game. That would be helpful. Coming up, one team with a good quarterback will try to beat another team with a good coach. It's the AFC Divisional Round, only on CBS. Looks like the CBS game is going to be the Browns and Chiefs. So the Chiefs at Arrowhead. This is the 3:05 Eastern kick on Sunday against the Browns. Chiefs and Browns is the CBS game this weekend. Fox has two games. They get both NFC games. Fox has Rams-Packers from Green Bay, 4:35 Eastern time on Saturday. And then they've got the early game, I should say the late game on Sunday, Bucks and Saints from the Superdome. That's 6:40. And then the night game on Saturday is going to be the NBC game, Michaels and Collinsworth, Ravens and Bills. Only on CBS!
CBS Sports Spectacular, yeah!
So, yesterday, we did Stunned to a News, and Bogus found a great story actually passed along to us from a listener, Moose, who runs the Up the Gut Instagram blog, of a dog that had a long-stemmed, a long axe in its mouth, and a postal worker took a picture of it and said, I'm not dealing with any dog with an axe in its mouth. So we did an axe-wielding dog story yesterday, which led to, as you know, Shep, who produced the show a couple of weeks ago, had infamously showed up to work on 40 hours no sleep because he was on, he has five other jobs, he said, and one of which is a dog walker. So we got into a bit about how Shep would walk the construction zone dogs, because this is just a lot to uncover or a lot to pull back here. Cap had made the graphic of the dog with the axe also having a construction helmet on and a level. And we were saying he was running a construction zone, and these would be the types of dogs that Shep would would walk. And so I started doing my Shep impersonation of the types of dog factoids he would talk about and having to walk the construction zone dogs. And this got Mraz really laughing. And I always get such a kick out of when I get Mraz really, really laughing. So I kept going and kept going and kept going. And he kept laughing and laughing and laughing more and more and more to where he was starting to unable to kind of like speak. He was choking. And then there comes a point where Mraz turns beet red, holds his fist over his mouth, if you were watching on the simulcast, and is gagging. And then grunts out, "I can't talk. I can't talk." And we didn't know what was going on. Like, okay, laughing is one thing. And as Bogush said, he sounded like the Penguin from Batman 2, which Katie Lindahl dressed up as for Halloween. And he's like, "I can't talk. I can't talk." And he gets up and leaves the screen, to which we see the pajama bottoms on on Mraz. We then go to break and we come back and say, what happened? And Mraz ends up on that he had coughed up something, namely a bone shard. A bone shard from eating wings on Saturday. So I'm listening to this. I said to my wife, I said, you have to listen to this segment. It's the most ridiculous segment that we've had in a long time. She listens to it and the audio stops and the bourbon bell says, this is like if you pulled up like a trophy fish and then under it was a buried treasure. Like you thought the fish itself was good enough. It was great enough. And then you found out that Mraz ate wings 2 days ago, swallowed a chicken bone, and coughed it up during the show. And yes, all of that happened. Let's play for you a segment of how this unfolded yesterday on the show. Did you ever know it was a bunch of terriers that built Levittown? With their very own paws back in 1972, man.
Good morning, Jody.
Saturday's lunch.
Which lunch?
Mraz is coughing up a lung.
We should go to a break before he dies.
Let's keep it going.
I can't talk. I can't talk.
He looks like the Penguin.
I can't talk.
More than Katie Lindahl.
Pink and red. What is going on?
I can't. I can't talk. I can't talk. I can't talk.
Just I can't talk.
Oh, I can't talk.
So, Mraz, describe to us how exactly this happens. How do you cough up a chicken bone? Usually that's like what happens in a garbage disposal, but it just lodged in your lung for 2 days?
I love these wings near me, and I got him Saturday night, and it was the end of the Seahawk-Ram game, and I had a flat, and I went to clean the flat, and like the bone snapped, and half of the bone on one of the sides of the flat went down with the meat. But it was such a thin bone that I started choking immediately, and I couldn't get it up. And my chest hurt all day Sunday. It did. It hurt all day Sunday, but I had a good couple laughs Saturday. I wasn't thinking anything of it. So when we went to do that Shep and I started laughing, the laugh must have shook everything down in my pipes up. And I knew all of a sudden I felt something come up and get lodged in my throat. And when I did, I got up and he said, "But John Pitts, I have a staircase right there." And I grabbed the railing of the staircase, and I was coughing a little more, and out came the little piece of bone. So it had sat for nearly 36 hours inside my body and never passed through the digestive system, was still able to be regurgitated back up.
I can't believe you impaled yourself on a wing for 36 plus hours.
It didn't puncture a lung.
Did DA save your life?
Maybe. And honestly, I'd forgotten about it. You know, it was small enough that I just assumed, all right, I swallowed a bone, we'll figure it out. People swallow stuff all the time.
We'll figure it out. It's like taking a sack on third down. You know, we're going to punt away. We'll figure this out of the next drive. Let's just try to tilt the field.
Reset. And again, everyone swallows things. I've never swallowed a bone or
never.
A cold. Like, what are you talking
no,
about?
Never.
Everyone swallows things.
Bogus. Clearly, I was being a real slob when I was eating the wings. I was really cleaning them. The bone was fragile. It snapped. It was a stabbing piece in me. I felt it. I felt my chest hurt all day Sunday. But I assumed, not to be too graphic, that it would pass through my system. I didn't know it would come back up from laughing about Shep on a Monday during the show. If it just passed through, it would have happened. It would have been like passing a kidney stone. And nobody would have known about it.
Crunching and munching.
So when you were laughing on the show, the bone's not actually up in your mouth yet. It's just getting dislodged. And then you get up from the microphone and you brace yourself against the staircase. And at that point, you cough it up.
It comes up like that. And I ended up cleaning it up. I flushed it down the toilet.
And so you then had a bone from 2 days ago back up in your mouth.
Yes. Now, again, it wasn't, we're on Monday morning, this is Saturday night, so, I mean, it wasn't a full 2 days, it was a day and a half.
Oh, it was only 36 hours.
What do you think happens here, Bogues? I mean, does the shard of the wing bone just remain in Mraz's lung area for the rest of his life? Does it eventually get digested? I mean, that seems crazy that you could just have this foreign object floating around your esophagus for 2 days.
I mean, I'm certainly not qualified to answer this, but, like, everything I've learned and knew about, like, how your digestive system worked is that, like, it had to get stuck on something. It can't just not progress, like, down your throat into your stomach. Like, it had to literally be, like, stuck in something to prevent it from being moved downward. So I say it half jokingly. You might have somehow saved his life yesterday, because I don't know what that was going to happen with that bone if it just sat there. Not getting dislodged at some point.
I had a lot of bread on Saturday, too, so I'm starting to wonder if maybe, you know, bread had big pieces and it almost created like a Sleep Number mattress within my throat, and somehow nothing was getting through and the bone was just kind of sitting there, bouncing up and down, giving its Sleep Number. I don't know.
I'm going to take back my my bones.
Again, guys, I understand how ridiculous it is, but if you lived my life, a bone shard coming up is the least of my worries.
I mean, it is amazing that you still fit into your XL jersey after all these years. Congrats on that.
Because I'm not digesting full enough. That's why I'm not as fat as I could be.
Small victories.
Just think about how that unfolded. It goes from a dog wielding an axe and stunned to a noose to a construction zone dog to Shep's walking in the construction zone dogs to Mraz coughing because he's laughing so much to he can't talk. And then to a bone from 2 days earlier from a chicken wing he ate, of course, being coughed up.
So you could make the case that Moose, who runs an Instagram page about the food I make to watch football, actually saved my life from the food I eat watching football killing me because he submitted this under the news story.
Oof. Multiple people yesterday said it didn't seem like you guys were all that concerned that Mraz could be dying. And I guess I just have seen this bit so many times before where you have an oopsie, you burp up something else. It sounds like you're going to puke. You want, you know, it just kind of feels like you're always in physical distress.
No question.
So I didn't take it too seriously. And it was great that it was happening on camera because then I knew that Cap was capturing it. I didn't want to go to commercial break and then something really great happens. Like, you know, the bone actually comes up on camera.
Right. Or I am dead and Connor Green gets the job. Right. Either way.
Right. Either way, we win.
It's a win-win situation
content.
There.
But all day on Twitter, people, you dead yet? You learn your lesson? You fat? You this? You that? Not once did I get a, are you okay? It was basically praying for death.
Do you know who asked if you were okay?
Your wife?
My mom. My mom,
wow.
Who has still not forgiven you for the career takedown of like 3 summers ago. I talked to her yesterday after the show, and she said, she didn't say your name. I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but she said, is he okay after that coughing thing?
That's nice.
I said, yes, Sean is okay, Mom.
For Bogus's mom, you are he who shall not be named.
Yep.
That's nice. Tell her thank you. I am okay, guys. I'm fine. And I'm right back on the horse. I had wings again yesterday after I coughed it up.
Way to go.
I had some left over in the fridge.
There you go. As you said, we'll figure it out. I swallowed a chicken bone. We're just going to punt away here. We'll figure it out. We'll make adjustments at halftime. We'll eat wings again.
It'll pass on this side or the other. That was my thought.
I can't talk. I can't talk.
I have felt great since, by the way. I feel so much looser.
I bet.
My breathing's better, everything.
Yeah, I bet.
Maybe he was in there longer. Maybe this wasn't from Saturday night.
Actually, I should say my breathing's better. My wife did say as I was falling asleep last night, I sounded like her father, who smokes 2 packs a day breathing. So there might be some breathing issues still left over.
I would love Maraz to just be asleep on the couch, snoring, and then that's when the bone comes up, and Danielle looks over and is just like a chicken butt. Oh, sorry.
Gets hit by some
throws
shrapnel.
It onto the floor. It's like a stray cat just like hocking up a hairball. Here comes the chicken bone.
Give him some butter.
What's for breakfast?
I can't pass.
Oh, all right, Mr. Bogish has our headline of this morning. Mr. Bogues, what do we got?
Dia, you mentioned this earlier this hour. Nick Saban now has 7 national titles. That is one more than Bear Bryant, but there is still no comparison in Saban's eyes.
I think Coach Bryant is, you know, sort of in a class of his own in terms of what he was able to accomplish, what his record is. And, I mean, he's the one that made Alabama and the tradition at Alabama a place where lots of players wanted to come.
Saban now has 6 titles with Alabama after bulldozing Ohio State in Miami last night, 52-24. Devontae Smith caught 2 touchdown passes in the final 3:20 of the first half to blow the game open for good. The Heisman winner played only the first half, though, because of a finger injury. Still had 12 catches for 215 yards and 3 touchdowns. The Ohio State offense scored 17 points in the game's first 20 minutes, only 7 in the final 40. Justin Field threw for just 194. Running back Trey Sermon injured on his first carry and did not return. And before the game, there were reports that Bill O'Brien will be Bama's new offensive coordinator. Steve Sarkisian officially moves on as Texas head coach today. The Eagles added themselves to the list of teams looking for a head coach yesterday, firing Doug Peterson. Owner Jeffrey Lurie said Deuce Staley, one of their assistants, will likely be a candidate to replace Peterson, while Peterson might become the leading candidate for the Jets' job. And Raiders running back Josh Jacobs will not face DUI charges for last week's single-car crash. Jacobs' blood alcohol level was under the legal limit. His only charge is failure to exercise due care in crashing his car. In the
Cap is playing a slow mo of me dying right now in the 4-box.
It's amazing. I mean, we've got one of those quad box things going, and right now there's just a slow motion replay of Mraz coughing up a lung.
And if anyone's questioning you, like, exaggerating this, the unnatural red color you are right now in this video is proof that this is a real life threatening situation. My goodness. In the NBA last night, Gordon Hayward scored 34. The Hornets routed the Knicks 109-88, 34 as well for Bradley Beal. His Wizards beat the Suns 128-107. Meanwhile, the Mavs and Pelicans didn't play last night. No Bulls Celtics tonight. While
Bogus is such
is
a professional
doubt,
right now, guys. Can I just tell you, he is just such a freaking pro's pro. If you are watching at watchda.com or on Twitch at CBS Sports Radio, you are hearing the words come out of Bogish's mouth right now. He's doing a wonderful, splendid update. No ums, no stammers, no mistakes. And he is watching under him Mraz choke to death. There's a slow motion like we are watching a turnover in the final 2 minutes of a playoff game. We've got to go to the official booth and watch it from every angle in slow-mo. Right now, Kaplan has all angles. He's got like the 4K camera slow-mo from the Fox NFL broadcast. Yes.
And if this was Sunday afternoon, I'd make a just the tip joke right now. Like just the tip of the wing got in there. And speaking of Sean and eating, let's get stunned.
Woohoo!
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
DA, we've had too many crossovers on this front, on this show. Man eats dog's food and or poop. Dog eats man's food. And now Ben and Jerry's is doing us no favors by launching a line of frozen dog treats. The 2 flavors are pumpkin and peanut butter with pretzels, which are definitely going to confuse Sean. However, they are healthy enough. They're healthy, so maybe he'll avoid them because of that. They're made from sunflower butter. But Ben and Jerry's is laying traps everywhere for people who struggle between human and dog food by making delicious-sounding dog food that you can now buy in your grocers later this month.
So you're going to put, like, a Chunky Monkey or one of the other delicious Ben and Jerry's human brands right next to doggy cookies and peanut butter, or pumpkin with cookies or peanut butter with pretzels, and not think doofuses across the country are going to be reaching for the doggy desserts and eating it? You're crazy. You're right. This is going to cause all types of gastrointestinal distress from people that are just housing all these doggy desserts from Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah, and me and my dog last night just split some vanilla. We both ate out of the same bowl on the floor watching the national championship game.
Gross.
So I'm assuming that this is really going to make him angry if I give him his own ice cream and we don't share it like we usually do.
Tell me how that works. How do you eat out of the same bowl?
So I lay down on my stomach. He lays down on his stomach. He licks the bowl and I use a spoon. We do this a couple times. I don't care. It's my dog. We have fun.
Are you sure you use a spoon?
Gross.
I do. I put 3 scoops of vanilla in there and I say, all right, Eli, you ready to go? And me and him lay down and we eat the ice cream together. It's something I like doing, having fun with him.
Hey, it's very Lady and the Tramp of you.
Yeah.
So which of these two flavors do we think sound better for the dog? Is it pumpkin with cookies or peanut butter with pretzels?
I think it's peanut butter with pretzels. I think those are two of dog's favorite things. Pumpkin's very seasonal for a dog. I think the peanut butter...
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Eli only likes pumpkin stuff from about Labor Day through Thanksgiving.
Oh,
he
really?
Loves peanut butter and pretzels all throughout the year.
He eats what? He drinks pumpkin lattes during the fall to get into the mood?
I'm telling you, there are certain like pumpkin-flavored items, like the treats and stuff. You give it to him around Christmas time, he's not interested anymore. But peanut butter pretzels all year.
When we come back, why didn't Pete Carroll run the football more? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Laugh and learn every morning aboard the mothership.
Jeff Passan joins us this morning on the show.
How did I do? Did I sound awake?
Yeah, you did a great job today. It was awake. You were crisp. I thought that was an A-plus effort.
I feel so good to hear that. Thank you, D.A. You're the best. Even if you lie to me, I still love you.
It's D.A. on CBS Sports Radio.
Yesterday, when Pete Carroll was addressing the end of the season, he admitted something, and that is that the Seahawks became totally enamored with the deep ball and kind of fell in love with the sexiness of Russell Wilson creating big plays downfield. And Wilson was amazing at it in the first half of the season. But as the season unfolded, Wilson was less and less effective. And what Pete Carroll alluded to was every defense started playing too high, too deep safeties. In other words, they did not respect the intermediate passing or the run game, so they could drop both their safeties back into coverage and remain over top, preventing any of the big plays, quick strikes downfield. Wilson and that deep ball in the first 2 months of the season was a sight to behold. It was just a gorgeous, beautiful rainbow that seemed to be connecting with every wide receiver that went downfield, specifically DK Metcalf. But that just totally dried up, and the Seahawks had nothing. They couldn't get the football downfield at all offensively on Saturday's game. And Carroll said that they became too addicted to the beauty, the ease, the sexiness of the easy play, the big play, the downfield strike, and they completely ignored the way that defenses were playing. And that's a real issue, that Pete Carroll was stubborn enough and Schottenheimer was stubborn enough not to realize what wasn't working. And if I'm a Seahawks fan, I'm really bent out of shape because we have a home game against John Wolford, who gets injured on the second series of the game. If the Rams going into Saturday's game felt like John Wolford was a better option than Jared Goff, that means that even though Jared Goff led them to a Super Bowl 2 years ago, Goff was a backup quarterback with one hand. And that Russell Wilson healthy could not figure out how to outduel him. And you saw the video of DK Metcalf frustrated on the sideline, throwing his helmet. He knew, and they all knew, deep wasn't working. Downfield wasn't working. It hasn't been working in months, and they would not get away from it. And I think Schottenheimer is a problem calling plays. I think the Seahawks have had problems with their play callers. Carroll's going to bring back Schottenheimer because they average a lot of points and big yards per play, but so much of that was the first half of the season. And it's a problem when a guy who's 69 years old, who's been in the game for this long, gets stubborn like that. Carroll should have seen this. Carroll should have sensed this. And Carroll, having won a Super Bowl and gone to another, should have recognized when you adjust because defenses have already adjusted. And that should not be ignored about how bad the end of this season was for a Seahawks team that went 12-4. When we come back, Lamar Jackson questions.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.